welcome everyone to our Three Ideas in 30 Minutes. Welcome back to our 30 favorite minutes of the week. Enjoy the chillin'. All right, here we go. Ideas number one and two are from the same Sefer. I actually got in trouble the other night because I was asked to speak at Mincha Maariv at the last second. And I pulled a Sefer off the shelf. And I'm sitting there during Mincha and I know you're not supposed to, but I was preparing something to say. And I was like, oh, this is a good idea. I'm going to save this for three ideas. So then I went to the next idea. And I was like, ooh, this is also a good idea. I want to save this one for three ideas. And then I flipped the page again. There was nothing else. So I had nothing to say at Mincha Maariv. So I had a decision. Do I save the ideas for three ideas? Or do I use one of them for Mincha Maariv and have to find a new one? So I found something to say at Mincha Maariv. And here we go. Three ideas. Okay. First one comes from a Medrash, page number one. The Medrash on the Pasuk, Ve'ata Titzaveh, quotes a Pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Zayis ra'anon yafeh priyit tohar. Kara Hashem Shimcha, Shmecha. The Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Yud Aleph Tes Zayin, tells us that Hashem compares the Jewish people to Zayis, to an olive tree. Ask the Medrash, V'chi lo nikra Yisrael ela kezayis, hazeh bilvad. Wait a second. Are you trying to tell me that Jewish people are only compared to an olive? So the Medrash says, I'll show you examples where the Jewish people are compared to grapes, and where the Jewish people are compared to figs, and where the Jewish people are compared to dates, and it goes on and on and on, to a cedar tree, etc., etc., etc. So why then, here out of all types of trees, and types of, I guess, olives, a fruit, vegetable? Fruit, okay, fruit. So why out of all fruit do we compare to the olive tree? So the Medrash says the answer is that all other fruit, kol ha-mashkim mis'arvim zeh bezeh, all other fruit becomes mixed one to another. Ve'ashemen, so we know, it's what's it called? Pure, well that was a fancier term, pure olive oil. It's pure, it doesn't mix well with other things. And therefore, he says, kach Yisrael, the Medrash says, so to the Jewish people, don't mix with the other nations of the world. He quotes another Sefer, Sefer Torah HaMikra, which says something very similar. But I want to suggest, based on the Sefer, beautiful Sefer, Areshes Vaseinu, an entirely different understanding for why it is we are compared to olives or an olive tree. And if you turn to page number two, it's based on the Gemara in Horios. Very strange Gemara in Horios. And then more sheets here. Very strange Gemara in Horios. The Gemara in Horios says the following. Amar of Yochanan, Kishem Shehazayis Mishkach Limud Shel Shivim Shana. The same way that an olive causes you to forget 70 years of your learning. So too, what's the example? Kach shemen zayis meshiv limud shel shivim shana. So olive oil causes you to remember your learning of 70 years. What in the world is this talking about? What does it mean that olives cause me to forget my learning, but olive oil causes me to remember my learning? What is going on here? Says this beautiful Sefer. He says on the bottom of page number two, he says, you want to know the difference between an olive and an olive oil? In an olive, where's the oil? The oil is on the inside. It's not anywhere. It's contained. It's not, so to speak, sharing itself with anything else. Olive oil is once you've extracted the oil from the olive, then it can be used in a variety of circumstances. Says the Sefer Resh of Aseinu, that is our obligation as Jews. Our obligations as Jews is not to keep things to ourselves, but it's to share with other people. So whether that comes to my money, whether that comes to my time, whether that comes to my resources, or whether it comes to my limud Torah, my learning, things that I have, gifts and resources that Hashem gave me, talents, is not so that I could keep it to myself. But everything that I have from Hashem is so that I can share it with other people. So if Hashem gave me an ability, just before I came here, my wife had a flat tire. There was a nail in the tire. I would not know how to change a flat tire from changing a light bulb if it hit me in the face. I do not know how to do any of that stuff. But Baruch Hashem, there is something called Chaverim. And I called Chaverim, and this young kid, I always love when they don't know who I am. Oh, what's your name, sir? Warms my heart. I love it, right? So this kid had no idea who I was. He's in FAU. Yeshiva guy. Came, fixed my tire, and we're good to go. Hashem gave him a gift. I wouldn't know how to do that if he gave me 5 hours to have done that. Hashem gave him a gift. He's an engineering student at FAU. He's good with this stuff, and he uses his talent to be able to help. He didn't just save me money. He saved me 2 hours at a car mechanic tomorrow, and once they were there, they'd probably find 15 other things that were wrong. He saved me all that. Why? Because Hashem had a talent, and he wants to share it. So some people have talents. Some people have resources. Some people have time. Everyone has something. Hashem gives us stuff, but he says, don't keep it for yourself. I want you to share it with other people. And therefore, he says on the bottom of page number 2, that's the difference between zayis and shemen zayis. That's the difference between an olive and an olive oil. Top of page number 3. He says, shazayis, when you talk about an olive, yesh bo shemen atzur visagur besocho. The oil is contained inside of it, but you know what it's not doing? It's not spreading. It's not being shared with anyone else. Vena yotze lechutz. It never goes on the outside. That, he says, is compared to a Jew that keeps his Torah to himself. And if you keep your Torah to yourself, if all you do is learn for your own knowledge and your own ability, then you know what happens? You're going to forget it. You're going to forget it. That's a skula to forget your Torah is to never share it. On the other hand, he says, Masha'in kein shemen zayis. He says, on the other hand, you have the olive oil. The olive oil is the olive, but the oil has now been shared. Shu shemen shekvar yotza min hazayis. It's olives, the oil, where it's removed from the olive. Romez al iske Torah she'adam hu machzik la'atzmo, elo shu motzi misocho umilame la'achirim. It's when I have gifts, it's when I learn, but I don't learn just so that I know how to keep halacha. And I don't learn just so that I could get to Olam Haba, and I don't... No, I learn so that I can share. I learn so that I can teach. No matter what you know or how little you know, I promise you there's someone who knows less than you. There's something that you can give over, whether it's an insight, whether it's Torah, whether it's life wisdom, all of us. Hashem gave it to us not so that we could keep it to ourselves, but Hashem gave it to us so that we can share it with other people. And he says, now we understand the Gemara. The Gemara says that an olive is compared to someone who forgets his Torah. But olive oil is someone who remembers the Torah. Because the skula to forget your Torah is if all you do is you keep it to yourself. You want to know the way to lose the talents that Hashem gave you or the resources or the abilities? It's if you keep it to yourself. Hashem gave it to us so that we can share it. And when we share it, then Hashem gives us more of it. Because he sees that we're not just keeping it to ourselves, but we're sharing it with other people. Now you ask, why is the Medrash sharing this on Ve'ata Tetzave? It's a beautiful word. It's a reminder that what we have is not to be kept to ourselves, but it's to be able to share with other people. And every single one of us has something, whether it's resources, whether it's abilities, whether it's talents, whether it's gifts, whether it's time. Even if you have nothing else, if you give someone who has a broken heart, you give them your time, that's invaluable, right? So every one of us has something, but it's not to keep to ourselves, it's to share. What does this have to do with Ve'ata Tetzave? So he says on the middle of page number 3, he says, "Vizel remes hakasuv." This is alluded to in the pasuk of Ve'ata Tetzaveh es bnei Yisrael v'yikhu eilecha. How do you translate that? Right now, he says, "I'm going to command the Jewish people that they shall take for you." Right, v'yikhu eilecha. They should take for you. Says the Reshes Vasenu sheyil medu lakach mimcha lios bibchina shemen zayis zach kasis lamor. That what should you be like? You should be like the Shemen Zayis. Lahotzi haTorah misocho kedei la'ira la'acherim. That their goal, the purpose of what we have is to take the Torah and to share it, to light other people's fire. V'al yidei kach yisku la'alos ner tamid. And that's how we light our own fire. So we think that when we give, it lessens me? No. When we give, that actually is what allows my flame to burn even brighter. That's the paradoxical nature of Torah. That's the paradoxical nature of the resources that Hashem gave us. And that, he says, is how you understand the first pasuk in the parsha. What does it mean? V'yikhu eilecha shemen zayis zach. That this pressed olive oil, because we're supposed to be not like the olive, but we're supposed to be like the olive oil. We don't keep it to ourselves, but rather we share it with other people. And if we do that, that's the skula for the ner tamid. So you want more wealth? It's not by keeping it to yourself, it's by sharing. You want Hashem to give you more gifts and more resources and more ability? It's not by keeping it to yourself, it's by sharing it. And when we do that, it's lalos ner tamid. That causes our flame to burn even brighter. We can't walk through the world with a selfish attitude and a selfish mindset. We have to be not the olive, but the olive oil. That's idea number one. I think such a beautiful idea, and you see why. I passed over it at Mincha, because I said, I got to share it with you guys. Mincha, everyone's on their phone, they're half asleep, they're comatose, it would have been wasted. But here, we have Chulent, we have Coca-Cola, everyone's awake. So I want to share with you. Okay, that's idea number one. Idea number two comes from the bells, bells and whistles. Okay, we have a new building going up in Mirtz Hashem, FF&E. We're going to have maybe, or maybe not, some bells and whistles. Probably not so many. But anyways, the Pasuk says, when it comes to Aaron, Ve'aya al Aaron l'shareis, v'nishma kolo bevo el ha-kodesh, lifnei Hashem, b'tzeiso, v'lo yamus. That Aaron, of course, we know, so his voice, right, he had the bells, and that's what announced him as he came into the Beis HaMikdash. Asks the Aresha Sivaseinu again, v'yesh lavin, but I don't understand. Chizem muvan lama bevo, yesh sorech, sheyishma kolo. I understand why when Aaron went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they had to hear his voice. In other words, there's a form of an honor that when, you know, like when the king enters, right, you announce that the king is entering. Or nowadays when a president, they have the music, or a closer when he comes out of the bullpen, right? Every closer's got their own music. Sandman, right? Wasn't that Mariano? Okay. Just saying, he did blow a save in 2004, which caused the Red Sox to win the World Series, but we won't go into that now. Okay, but anyway, so I get the music, right? I get the announcing, okay? But ask the Aresha Svaseinu, turn to page number four. And if you're wondering why I didn't just all put these on double pages, it's because I couldn't, once I shrank it down to fit, I had Rachmanis on some of us older guys in the room. So I decided to kill more trees instead. But he says, I understand why the Kohen Gadol needed to announce himself when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's honor, that's kavod, that's the trumpet blowing, that's the Sandman coming out of the bullpen. But why? But then why does he have the bells when he comes out also? What does that accomplish? Do I need to know when the Kohen Gadol left the Beis HaMikdash? What do I care? He's on a clock that I need to know that he was in there for a certain amount of time. You know, what? Yeah, so is that what's happening? The Kohen Gadol's punching the clock on the way in. So I understand on the way in, that's kavod, that's honor, that's announcing the Kohen. There's a great reverence to that. But why do I need to know when he leaves? Why do I care about when he leaves? Yeah?
They have a recession, the graduation, whatever.
So maybe it's the graduation ceremony. Okay. You want to know he's successful coming out alive, right? We know that there were times in history that wasn't always the case. Listen to his answer. It's so beautiful. He says the following. He says, when the Kohen Gadol, I'll tell it to you outside and then we'll read inside. He says, when the Kohen Gadol goes out of, I'll say, real life, and he enters into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, what do you think that experience is like? It must have been an amazing experience, right? Almost picture yourself like, you know when you're like going on vacation. So everyone has like a different point on vacation where they like they exhale because they are able to leave behind all the stress and now they go into a different mindset. The Kohen Gadol kind of did that, only it was almost more stressful, but he was leaving behind everything. And when he was in the Kodesh Kodashim, he was singularly focused on a relationship with Hashem. Can you imagine the Hashras HaShchina that he experienced when he went to the Kodesh Kodashim? Can you imagine that one-on-one experience? I mean, picture the most intense Ne'ilah you've ever had times 100. That's what the Kohen Gadol had when he went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, when he went to the Beis HaMikdash. So he's having this intense rendezvous with Hashem. Okay? What's he thinking about? So he's thinking about the Ashras HaShchina. He's thinking about the intensity of being in such close proximity to Hashem. He's literally standing with the Malachim. He's standing with the angels. But what does he forget at that moment? He's so separated. And bifurcated from the rest of the world, he forgets about people. And so when the Kohen Gadol leaves the Kodesh Kodashim and goes back into quote-unquote real world, what he's essentially telling himself is that that is just as, if not more important than what I had in the Kodesh Kodashim itself. And so the bells ring twice. One, when he goes into the Kodesh Kodashim to show that his relationship with Hashem is important. But two, when he leaves the Kodesh HaKodeshim and goes back out into the real world to remind him that that role is just as, if not more important than what he experienced in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That our jobs as Jews is not just to sit one-on-one with Hashem. Our jobs as Jews is not to climb the Himalayas and to sit in meditation all day. That's not what it means to be a Jew. What it means to be a Jew is to care about people, is to care about the needs and the wants of the people that you represent. And that is equally an important avodah, just as much as being in the Kodesh HaKodashim. And so the same way we announce him on his way in, to show honor and kavod to that experience, we also have the bells ringing on the way out, to show kavod and honor to that experience, reminding the Kohen Gadol that he plays two roles. That there's one role vis-a-vis his relationship with Hashem, and there's another role vis-a-vis his relationship with the people. And you can't sacrifice one for the other. You can't go into Yom Kippur, I'll just use that as the easiest example, and just think about Hashem and your relationship with Hashem. You have failed miserably on Yom Kippur if that's all you did. Yom Kippur is also about caring about other people and davening for other people and worrying about the needs of Am Yisrael. That's what it is about equally. It's not just about you and your relationship with Hashem. It's about you being a representative of other people. And that's what he says here. So if you look down on the bottom of page number 4, he says, "Bekach navinis kavanas tziltzulei pamoni me'ilat tchil." He says, now we understand what these bells are all about. Kasher ha-kohen nichnas pnima lifnei Hashem. When the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKodashim, a lovely sorer. He had to uplift himself. He had to inspire himself. Because he's standing before the Melech Malchei Amlachim HaKodesh Baruch Hu. Because he's in like this meditative trance with Hashem, so it's so easy to forget about the needs of the people. And that's a problem. That's a problem. Because he's there not just to represent himself, but he's there to represent the people as well. And therefore he says, V'yalkein bo'a pamonim lahaskiro. Therefore, the bells are there to remind him that when he leaves the Beis HaMikdash, ki hu shayach la'am. It was before Rebo made it into a song. Right? Ki hu shayach la'am. That he belongs to Am Yisrael. Al kol bayosav. And all their problems, and all their worries, and all their challenges. Ve'alav liyos er letzarchei apracha kol yachid v'yachim Yisrael. In the same way he experienced the intensity of the relationship with Hashem one-on-one, he equally needs to care and worry about and daven for the concerns and the challenges and the worries of the Jewish people as well. This very much connects to idea number one, but I think it's such a beautiful reminder that we lose sight of this. Sometimes we think that religious experience means the intensity of my personal religious experience, how my learning is, how my davening is. No. That's part of it. But another part of it is caring about other people and davening for other people. If your Shmon Esrei is just about yourself, if your Shmon Esrei, you come out and you say, "Ah, oh, I experienced a connection to Hashem." But you didn't daven for anyone else, and you didn't daven for hostages, and you didn't daven for soldiers, you didn't daven for your family, you didn't daven for your neighbor, then you missed the point. You're the Kohen Gadol going to the Kodesh HaKodashim every time you take 3 steps into a Shmona Esrei. So are you just leaving the world behind you and going into this one-on-one relationship with Hashem, or are you also caring about the needs of others? In fact, the Yesh Kodesh, not in the Yesh Kodesh, in Azach Sharash Avreichim says, not on this idea, but very similarly. He says, you know, most people make a mistake when they go into Shmon Esrei. Most people assume that when you go into Shmon Esrei, the goal is to block out all of the stresses in your life. And then once I've blocked out all the stresses, then I can have a clear head and approach Hashem. Says the Yesh Kodesh, no, that's the exact opposite. The whole point is you're supposed to fill your head with everything that's worrying you and everything that's stressing you and all the challenges. And then you go into Shmon Esrei because you're supposed to bring them with you. And so you don't forget about the challenges of Am Yisrael. You bring it with you. And you don't forget about what your neighbor is going through. You bring it with you. That's what it means to be a real Kohen Gadol. And that's why the Kohen Gadol's bells ring out coming in, but also going out to remind him that his avoda on behalf of the people was just as important as his avoda in his relationship with Hashem. So we saw idea number one was the idea of the olives versus the olive tree. The Gemara tells us that we should be olive versus olive oil. That we should be olive oil, not an olive. Olives keep it to himself. Olive oil shares it. That's what it means to be a Jew, that we're supposed to spread, we're supposed to share. We're not supposed to keep it to himself. Idea number two comes from the idea of the bells. Why is it that the Kohen Gadol had the bells not just going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but also going out? I understand going in, that's the announcing the trumpet. But why going out? So we had a few suggestions, but he suggests here to remind the Kohen Gadol of the sanctity of his responsibility, not just for his own relationship with Hashem, but for his responsibility for other people as well. Idea number three. What?
The idea of the Mayor Mikvah, that the Kohen Gadol passes away, so the Kohen Gadol is the Mayor Mikvah, so that's why
right.
There are people actually sitting in the Mayor.
There's right. Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay, last idea. Last idea I didn't print out for you. It's just two psukim. That's it. But I'm telling you, it's going to blow you away. It's going to blow you away. You'll never look. If you're listening, you're here. I promise you, you will never, money back guaranteed, you will never look at these psukim again. And you'll see it trickle in other places of Tanakh as well, which I'm happy to share afterwards. Parshas Tetzaveh starts off with what mitzvah? What part of the Mishkan? Shemen Zayis. We just discussed that, right? What was the Shemen Zayis used in? The menorah, right? Lalos Ner Tamid. Because you have to have the Ner Tamid. How does Parshas Tetzaveh end? What's the other bookend of Parshas Tetzaveh? Right at the end of the Parsha. Okay, Ve'asisa Mizbeach Mikdar Ktores, Atzei Shitim Ta'aseoso. They have to make a Mizbeach for the Ktores. And then the Pasuk, tells us, Uva'alos Aronas Aneiros Ben Arbaim Yakti Rena. And again, this notion of Viktira Lev Aron Ktores Amim Baboker, Baboker, Betivos Naros Yakti Rena. Every time it talks about the menorah, not every time, I shouldn't say that. Most of the time it talks about the menorah, it talks about it in the context of the Ktores. So, for example, our Parsha starts with the menorah, ends with the Ktores. Even within the Ktores, when it talks about the Ktores itself, it couches it in the terms of the menorah. Uvalos Aron Asaneiros. When Aaron's already going to light the menorah, Yakti Renu Ktores Tamid, then he should do the Ktores. It makes it that they go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. So you see that in the Pasuk. You see that in the syntax of the Parsha, that it starts with the menorah, ends with the Ktores. I quoted you the Pasuk there, and you'll see it elsewhere throughout the Torah, that the menorah and the Ktores go together. Now, why is that the case? Why is that the case? Now, what makes it so strange is if you think about it, they are polar opposites. What is the role of the menorah? The role of the menorah is to light. Light generally means, gives clarity. So if I'm walking in a dark room and I put on a flashlight, so what was once murky and dark and full of fright, fright? Is that a word? I just make a word up? That's not a word?
It is a word.
Yeah, okay. Fright. Like frightened. Yeah, okay. Right? You're filled with fright. I don't know if I used that correctly there, but I'm sure my mom will correct me after listening to this, right?
You're good.
Filled with fear. Okay, we'll go with that, right? All of a sudden I put on a flashlight. And now there's clarity. It's been elusive, right? There's a sense of clarity. Ktores is the exact opposite. In Ktores, if I was in this room right now and I lit a fire or a form of a fire, right? So what would the room be filled with? The room would be filled with. All of a sudden, this room where you could see everything, suddenly what would you not be able to see? You would not be able to see anything. And so the menorah gives clarity, whereas the Ktores is the exact opposite of clarity. Instead, what is it? It is a sense of obscurity. So why is it that they're together? They're polar opposites. This is an amazing vort. I'm telling you, you will never look at it the same, right? If you think about it even further, the menorah in, you know, each of the kelim and the Beis HaMikdash represented something different. The menorah is symbolic of knowledge, symbolic of Torah. It gives knowledge. It's scholarship. Right? On the other hand, the Ktores, what's it made out of? The Ktores is made out of, we know, 12 parts, 11, excuse me, and one of them was the Chalbana, right? Now, why was that there? So we all know the famous word, because it smelled really bad, and we blend it together. So once again, you have menorah that's giving clarity, knowledge, elucidating things. The Ktores is specifically being murky. It's cloudy. It's taking that which was clear, and it's blending it all together. So even the Chalbana, which smelled really bad and was distinct, but when I fold it into the Ktores, all of a sudden, no one can understand and no one can follow it. It blends in together. So they are directly opposite. They're direct contrast to one another. And so if the menorah represents or enables discernment in distinction, the Ketores is the exact opposite. And so therefore it begs the question, why are they connected to one another? It's a good question, right? Do you ever think about that? No, neither did I until I saw this idea. Here's the answer, okay? A little bit's what I saw, a little bit's my own, which means you could tell me I'm wrong and I won't be offended. Okay, here we go. I think the Ketores and the Menorah is what Judaism is all about. I think it's what makes Judaism uniquely singular in our hashkafa, in our approach to life. The Menorah represents a certain clarity. In other words, Judaism, we have Torah. Ki ner mitzvah v'Torah, or Torah, we believe, gives us a sense of wisdom. It gives us a sense of insight. So the whole world is filled with darkness, and Torah gives us a sense of light, a sense of understanding that we would not have without the Torah. And yet, there's a limit to human knowledge. There's a limit to human understanding. No matter how much Torah we learn, and no matter how much wisdom we gain, no matter how much scholarship we have, and no matter how many technological advances we have, and we can send rocket ships into space and we can now have them get caught by two toothpicks and landed back where they were. They're reusable rockets. We've come a far way. And yet, there are things about this world we will never understand. There are things about this world that we will never grasp. The notion of Hashem is something that no matter how hard you try, there are parts of it you'll never understand. Moshe Rabbeinu, Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of men throughout our history, there were roadblocks that they hit that they were simply not able to understand. And Hashem said to be a Jew is not simply to strive to understand, but also to accept that which you're not able to understand. That's the basis of our faith. Basis of Emunah is the understanding that there are certain things I can't see, touch, feel, and yet I know it's there. And I can understand it, even though I can't understand it at all. Or that there are things that are going to happen, some of which I'll understand, some of which will bring me clarity. But there are other things that I won't understand at all. Certain mitzvos that might not make any sense to me. Certain mitzvos which might run in conflict with Western, you know, civilization and Western sensitivities. And I'm going to have to pick and choose. I'm going to have to say, am I okay not understanding why Hashem asks me to do this? Am I okay that Hashem runs the world in certain ways that I don't understand? So to be a Jew is a balance between the two of them. On the one hand, it's the menorah, but it's not just the menorah. Because the world is not just about our understanding. No matter how many technological advances we will have, there'll always be the Ketores that's going to balance it out. And we as Jews need to strive and be okay with both of them. We have to have the menorah, we have to seek advance, and we have to seek knowledge, and we have to seek wisdom, and we have to seek Torah. But we also have to recognize the Ketores comes along with it, that no matter how many technological advances we have, and no matter how far we come as a society, and no matter how advanced we come as a civilization, there's always going to be a part of this world that we don't understand. No matter the smartest brains in history, there are certain things we will not understand. And it's the combination of the two which requires us to be a Jew. To just have the Ketores, to just say, oh, I don't understand, that's not a correct approach. To just have the menorah, that's ego, that's arrogance. That's unhealthy also. Judaism is a blend of both of them. And that's why whenever you find one, you're going to have to find the other. Because they come together. They're a package deal. Rabbi Soloveitchik writes about this a lot of times in Rabbi Bezdin's book, if you want to look up, which is The Blue Bun. He has a whole chapter on this idea of that no matter how many technological advances we make as human beings, we're always going to encounter, he doesn't use these terms, but I'm going to use these terms, we're always going to encounter the Ketores. We're always going to encounter that sense of mystery, that sense of obscurity, that sense of, I'm not going to have the answers to everything. And it's the combination of the two of those which makes us Jewish. And that's why at the beginning we have the menorah, but at the end we have the Ketores. Ba'alos Aaron esane rose, yakti renu. The moment Aaron lights the candle, he also has to burn the incense because they have to go together. That's a Jewish hashkafa. That's what it means to be a Jew in the world. To seek knowledge, but to also be okay with our understanding that there are certain things that we're never going to be able to understand. So we saw three ideas in just under 30 minutes. Idea number one was the idea that we should be the olive oil, not the olive. Idea number two was that, why is it that the Kohen Gadol's bells ring on not just going in, but coming out also, reminding us of our responsibility not just to Hashem, but to take care of each other, to take care of Am Yisrael, to daven for other people's needs as well. And last but not least, it's the contrast, this paradox between the menorah, which represents clarity, and the incense, which obscures the vision. And we said, why is it that if they're paradoxical, if they're complete opposites, why do they always go together? Because it is the blending of the two, which makes a Jewish hashkafa. It's the blending of the two, which provides us with the correct approach to life, which is that we should always seek advances. Jewish people have always been at the forefront of technological advances, and yet to be a person of faith also recognize that there are limits to that, and we have to be okay, and we have to accept that as well as part of our faith. I wish everyone a good Shabbos.